Hello, everyone. Hello. We're going to have Nathan Cornell is going to be going around throughout the audience to ask anyone who wants to speak tonight to sign up on a sign-up sheet here. So he'll be coming around. There's additional sign-up sheets here at the podium. So anyone that is intending to speak tonight, if you could please just sign up on the sheet so we can allocate the appropriate time. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody is here and would like to speak, we hope that you'd like to speak, would you please come up and sign the sign-in sheets? Thank you very much.
Huh? Can I see that for a minute? Right. You trust me? All right. Wow. So you want them to sign up?
Yeah,
I think we've gone around.
They went around and I just...
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the sign-up sheet is going around for signatures. And I need to try to impress upon you, it's very, very important for you to come to the podium and speak to the issues, because this meeting is for you folks. It's about the special ed department, and I'll talk about it a little bit more. But there's only so much that I, as a council person, or Council President Travis, or any of my colleagues on the city council can do to help you if we don't have the comments and the mic. We need to hear from you what is going on, what's really taking place, and what's really happening. And if it turns out to be it's not, fine. But if it turns out to be this issue that has been presented to me to date, then we need to do something about it. So I understand your feelings. I'll talk about it a little bit more. I can assure you that this council person and Council President Travis have every intention of covering your back when you go to that mic. So just hopefully you can come to that mic and give us an education as to what your day-to-day experiences have been. Thank you. And we'll give it a few more minutes for folks to get here. This Apanog circulator isn't the most conducive for getting here easily, so we'll give it a few more minutes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody wants to speak this evening, please come up and sign on a sign-in sheet. Everybody is welcome.
Put your name on that or what?
There's one up there.
Take any list you want. Put a bucket of the list still.
They're all the same.
Yeah, there's another list over there too, so.
The same thing.
We started sending them around and we didn't realize we had like 5 lists going and we're not exactly professionals. So
not this they went on TV, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't matter which one I sign on.
I did, but I just think of like the same things obviously.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Karen, would you lead us in the pledge? Thank you. Well, we probably will still have some people joining us. I understand that there's still quite a bit of traffic out there. But as I said earlier, my name is Ed Lattiser. I am the councilman in Ward 5, and I am here this evening with Council President Donna Travis. Donna is co-sponsoring this meeting with me this evening. Thank you all for coming. It's a very important issue. It's a very sensitive issue. And it's an issue that we are determined to bring it out and bring it to the surface for whatever happens to be going on or not going on. I want to recognize all the members of the Educational Outreach Committee that's here at the table with me this evening. We have Nathan Cornell, co-chair. We have Karen Backus, school committee member, as well as co-chair. Darlene Netko is our clerk. William McCaffrey, Sue Baker, who is unable to attend with us tonight, as is Mr. McCaffrey. Sarah Callahan, who is not here. June Merchant, Michael Pierce, and Anthony Sinapi. Also with us this evening is our colleague, Councilman Tom Chardonnay. Thank you for coming tonight, Councilman. Other than Ms. Backus, do we have anyone else here from the school committee? Anyone else here from the school committee? No. Is there anyone from the school administration here? Anyone from the school administration here? Other than the three council people, is there anyone from the city administration here? Are there any staff personnel from RIDE here this evening? Anyone from RIDE here this evening? Interesting. I have got to impress upon all of you this evening that we are obliged to abide by the open meetings law. And on the posting that we did at the Secretary of State's office, it says as such: this meeting is an open meeting for people to state their views about issues relating to education matters in the Warwick Public Schools. So, having said that, our conversations this evening must be restricted to special ed. And we're going to have to make sure on our end that the conversation doesn't drift off or get involved with consolidations, contracts, or anything else other than special ed. Okay, so I really need your cooperation with that. We do not want to have any problems with regard to the Open Meetings Act. I also sent some information that was provided to me by the superintendent of schools regarding my intent to hold this meeting. And it doesn't do well when there's suggestions made that I can't do something. So I sent this to our council solicitor. And obviously, we are within our legal grounds to do this as a city council. But here are his comments. And again, it's important for you to realize. It says, confidentiality of individual student information is protected by law. That confidentiality can be waived by the parents of a child if they wish to discuss their individual child's situation in a public forum. So the parents can do so. It's a parent's decision. But other than that, you need to be careful, particularly if you are obviously not a parent or a teacher, that you cannot be identifying a pupil, student, and you can't be having conversations that could be circled back to unintentionally identify a student. So we have to be really cognizant of that. And we're going to keep a close eye on the comments. I also want you to realize that this meeting is being recorded live. We have decided to record it live because we fully realize that there's a fair amount of people who may not be able to attend this meeting for whatever reason or another, but certainly would like to have an opportunity to review, listen to the audio to get the sense of what took place at this meeting. I also had considered having the meeting streamed live so that folks at home could watch it. And I had inquired about that, and when I found out that it was going to cost us time and a half to have an employee from the city do it, I decided that wasn't in the best interest of the taxpayers, and we didn't particularly need to have it televised. What's important is that we're going to have the documentation and the representation of this meeting on audio, so it will be on record. I decided to moderate this meeting tonight, not particularly by choice, but in all honesty, because the people that I reached out to either had other commitments and couldn't make it, or there were concerns because I can't do it, Ed. I have a child in special ed. I can't do it because I'm a teacher in the school, or because my son or daughter works for the school department. So I get a sense for that repercussion thing that people are concerned with. And that's why I called for a public forum right here in this council chambers in front of, as it stands now, three members of the city council. Because we want you to feel comfortable in coming to that mic, knowing that we are absolutely behind you on your right to talk about what's going on. Be it positive or negative, you have that right. And we want to make sure that you're aware of that. When my wife and my son and my daughter, when we moved here 37 years ago to Warwick, we came here for two reasons. One was because we could get a lot of house for the least amount of money. Houses were very affordable 37 years ago in the city of Warwick, more so than elsewhere. And the primary reason we came here is because we knew, keep in mind, we both grew up in Smithfield. My wife and I met in high school. She was 15 at the time. We came from Smithfield, and we moved to Warwick. And we moved to Warwick primarily because Warwick had an outstanding school system. So we came because a home was affordable, and we had an outstanding school system. Today, I would have to second guess both of those. I have received an alarming number of letters, phone calls, emails, conversations in stores, in restaurants, people reaching out to me on the city council floor regarding what I consider to be serious issues involving the special ed department. Keep in mind, in government, as elected officials, if we have, as a rule, three or four people reach out to us on a single issue, that's significant. I'm talking dozens and dozens of people who have reached out and have conversations with me on the same issues. some people would like us, you, other folks here in Warwick, to think that this is isolated instances. It's been suggested to me that the folks that have come to me, it's an isolated instance. I don't buy that for a minute. I don't believe what's going on is an isolated incident. I'm particularly concerned that our special ed students, the students that need us to be there for them the most, the special ed students, are being compressed, shrunk down, because of statistics. And the statistic being that nationally, we have approximately 12.5% of the children in a school system in special ed. Here in Warwick, we have 18%. So when I say compressed, I mean that what I'm hearing is there is this mission to compress from 18% to somewhere near that 12.5%. My question to those doing the compressing is, what happens to the other 5%? What happens to those children? That's why it's so important tonight that we hear from as many of you as possible on that mic. I want to know what's going to happen to those 5%. There's also questions about whether or not federal and state guidelines are being followed by the folks running the special ed department. I don't know that. I am not an educator. I don't know that. All I know is what you folks tell me, what the people that reach out to me and my colleagues on the city council, what you tell us. I don't know if those guidelines are being followed. We need to hear it. And I have a feeling that there's a fair amount of people in this audience tonight that will be coming to the mic, speaking to that in other issues. So, one of a few questions that I have before we open it up to all of you is, how many people in this room have ever reached out to the school department with questions or concerns? Could you raise your hand?
I did.
For the record, on the tape, I would say about 80% of the people in this room, which is probably around 80 or 90 people, I'm just guessing, raise their hands. How many of you reached out to the administration in the school department, reached out to the administration in city government? How many of you reached out time and again to these agencies? About the same number. How many of you have received a reply?
That's what you mean by reply.
Well, at least an acknowledgement of your concern and questions. So far less than those that reached out. Like so many issues that we have going on in the special ed, I think the biggest issue of all is the lack of communication. That's why I asked how many people reached out and how many received a reply. Beyond, oh, we got your message. It's a lack of communication. It's a lack of involving the teachers and the parents in the process of special ed. I believe there's a strong shortfall in having the teachers and the parents involved in some of these decisions. This meeting tonight is for all of you. It's for all of you to help us to be able to help you. This is your meeting. This is your opportunity to have your voice heard, have it on public record, so that it can't be said this is only isolated instance. This isn't this big thing that some people would like you to think it is. It's an opportunity for all of you to speak for the special needs students that cannot speak for themselves. It is a huge opportunity. We'll be calling all of the speakers who signed up to come up and speak. We have this room till 9:30. I don't have a problem staying here later, Monday night. My colleagues on the council, we were here till 11. That was an early night for us, so we can stay later. And those of you who have not signed up, once the folks that have signed up, if you want to come up and speak, even though you have not signed up, just do so. Limitation on who can speak, who cannot speak. The only thing we got to do is make sure that we do not violate anything that would identify a student or anything like that. So we want to hear it. We want to hear to say the good, the bad. We want to hear it. So I'm going to turn the meeting to President Travis, and she will start calling down some people to the podium. Ms. Netko is kind enough to take the minutes of our meeting. Anyone that wants to review this meeting afterwards, give us a few days, and it will be up on the city website. Sometimes it could take a couple days to do so, but it will be on the city website. So I will turn this over to Council President. I'm sure she'll have some things to add, and we'll rock and roll. Thank you.
First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming out. This is a good turnout, and I know it's a big issue. I also want to thank Councilman Chardonnay. I wish I could say there were more of our colleagues here. The problem is, and I'm tired of hearing, oh, your city, you can't get involved. The school does their thing. That's so wrong. These are our kids, and we have to get involved. And that's why we're here. That's why we're here tonight, and I mean, we've been fighting. Some of us have been fighting constantly, but unfortunately, some people believe that, oh, you know what, don't get involved, step away. It's the school's issue. It's not. It's our issue. It's the whole city's issue. Everyone should be involved. So I thank parents. I thank teachers. I thank students. Everyone's who's involved. The committee works very hard, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you, so I won't waste much time talking, but... Karen, you got the list, so Karen, you're going to call the name?
I will.
Okay.
Cindy Smith.
Cindy Smith, okay.
Please.
Cindy, nothing like being on the hot spot in the first speaker. Somebody's got to do it.
Directly to that mic.
Is there a way to just
sound?
And I stop.
Yes, this is speaking.
Well, partly dead.
No.
It was laying down.
Nah, it's still doing it. And this isn't on because it's dead.
Can they all be turned off except for the one? Okay, turn all the lights off and see what we got.
There you go. I'll say, oh, yeah. No, it's okay. Thank you. My name is Cindy Smith, and I'm a parent here in Warwick. I have over 15 years with experience with the Special Education Department and working with with the administration, and as well as working as a parent advocate with many parents, not just here in Warwick, but throughout the state and in Massachusetts, doing advocacy work in helping to get secure the services. I wasn't sure I was even going to speak here tonight, but and I was thinking it would be more towards the end where I could offer some advice to the committee as well as to anyone else who's in the audience, that having an advocate, if you are grouping yourselves together to look at these situations, applying an advocate to go with a parent, there is less fear of going into a situation where they're going to be sitting at a table hearing information that they have no idea what's going to be. It's like a foreign language. It's still a foreign language to me at some times, and I have abundance of experience. But having somebody that they can go to that they feel secure with, and if that advocate has somebody else to go to, then you're not inundated with so many different parents coming with all the different stories. An advocate can do this work for free, is what I just do, and help filter. To train the parents on how to have a binder is usually what I would do, is you get a binder. As soon as you start this process, you begin it with the first is your IEP, and what does that mean? And then you go from training and you start putting your research in, and then your documentation and things of that nature. This will help you in advocating for these individuals with the administration and the schools and the different pieces, because all the information is in one place. I mean, to go on what a parent might say, they might misunderstand something and it doesn't sound right, but the law doesn't always apply to what sounds right or doesn't sound right. So there has to be a lot of emotional things that put aside and look at it from a business piece. Whenever I used to go into an IEP meeting, I learned it's a business meeting, it's not my kid. Sometimes I would cry because it hits you, and sometimes I would just be able to focus on what was appropriate for the child, whether it be my student or somebody else's student. It's not about getting the best education, it's about what's appropriate. And that hopefully will set the tone for where you're looking for. What is appropriate and how can we make this happen? And how is everyone held accountable to what their job is in this position, in this place? What does an IEP team look like? And what are all the pieces of everyone's responsibility in there? Hopefully that's a little way of starting it off. I'm not able to share all of my personal, as I think that was absolutely wonderful advice to give to people here.
Thank you.
Because you keep that to yourself, but we work on the rules, we work on what the federal guidelines are, and what are their options in order to move forward. I thank you for listening, and thank you very much. I'm out of the system, per se. But I thank you for giving this opportunity to a lot of these parents tonight. Thank you again.
Cindy, while we're waiting for Lisa to come down, that was a great suggestion that you had. And I certainly would want to let you all know, anyone that wants me to accompany them to a meeting, my card's here on the table. Call me, and I'll be there.
My name is Lisa Razemian. Yeah. That's fine. It's not unusual. I'm a teacher and feel an advocate for the students in the Warwick Public Schools. I have almost 30 years of experience with all students. Unfortunately, there are multiple students with behavior and social-emotional issues in our school. Last year, there was a lack of support personnel in the way of psychologists, social workers, and guidance counselors. The entire year went by without securing consistent added resources to help meet the needs of the students in our building. As this year started, we were told that there would be at least one support person in the way of psychologist, social worker, or guidance counselor in our building per day of the week. There has been some consistency in that. Unfortunately, the needs in our building have increased, and the resources are still not adequate. Some examples of the overt, significant behaviors that happen on a daily basis in our building include inappropriate language towards teachers and students, aggression toward other students, Children leaving the classroom without permission, running around the building, disrupting other classrooms, screaming or yelling that can be heard in nearby classrooms. Unfortunately, this year, there was also a change in configuration of our special education teachers. A limited continuum of services is available for students with disabilities within our school. Less teachers and teacher assistants are in our building to address a greater number of students. There are significant issues not being addressed on a daily basis, making a very chaotic and unsettling environment for all students to learn. That says it all.
Thank you. Before we call on the next speaker, I just want to recognize Councilwoman Vella Wilkinson, who has joined us. Thank you, Councilwoman. Appreciate it. Councilwoman Vella Wilkinson is one of the four of us that you've seen around quite a bit lately. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Richard Carenti. I'm the endorsed Democrat for mayor. I've been campaigning now for 23 months.
Richard?
Sir.
Special ed. Stick to special ed. No campaign issues.
No. I'm bringing special up this ed. Issue because I've heard it 1,000 times, Ed.
Okay. Just keep it focused on special ed, please. Thank you.
I will. Okay. I've heard this issue 1,000 times. And every time I talk about it, it pains me because I hear three words. I hear the word retaliation, I hear the word fear, and the one that goes right through me is I hear the word bully. There are seven people at this table that will protect bully. You have got to engage them, you have got to speak to them, and you will eliminate the bully. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jacob Madure, Warwick resident, Warwick Vets High School graduate 2016, and I speak today as someone who was on an IEP for the entire school career and someone who would be one of that 5% that you talked about earlier. 3 years ago, I told my story in front of the whole school committee, the story of my freshman year of high school, a story of depression and almost suicide, a story which did not end tragically because of the special needs program in which I was placed in going into high school. The Foundations program, a program which offered a foundation of support for high school students with varying disabilities. For this program is the reason why I stand before you today. I stand before you as someone who was, despite their additional freshman year, graduated with honors with a GPA over 3.75, for this is the reason why I am now enrolled in a honors program at a place of higher learning. This is all possible because I got what was outlined in my IEP. I got what I needed to be successful. However, the days after I walked across the stage at my high school graduation, the program, which is the reason why I stand before you today, was dismantled, leaving others without the foundation in which they needed to be successful. I would like to remind you that for everyone, there are others, sitting there silently, but still there. I cannot help but wonder what would have happened if this was my freshman year of high school. I would not have graduated with honors. I would have not have won Homecoming King, the Alumni Award recipient, among numerous other awards and recognitions. For I doubt I would have even graduated at all. I speak my story reluctantly, for obvious reasons. But I do it because I know firsthand how crucial it is to get what needs to be successful, and we're not doing that today, and I am one of those 5% that you mentioned earlier. Thank you.
Thank you.
Paula Regan, thank you. Wasn't expecting to speak, but I needed to. I'm a first grade teacher, and this is my 29th year teaching in Warwick. Sorry. The day before school started, I discovered that my class was getting four students that were scheduled for the new co-taught classroom in my building. Due to the fact that that co-taught classroom had 11 children with intensive IEPs out of their 21. Then at lunch on the first day, it was decided that two of the ones that were placed in my classroom would be put back into the co-taught classroom, and three others would be switched into my classroom. Most of the parents were never even notified of these switches. I have 21 students, five with intensive IEPs, and one with only a 504 because they felt a kindergartner doesn't need an IEP. Since they had closed a therapeutic room in the district, they decided to place the behavior specialist in my room for support. No special educator. Three to four of these children are so disruptive that they have needed to be removed multiple times already this year from my classroom. But it is after they have run around the room, written on others' work, taken things of others, ripped materials, thrown things across the room, screamed, sworn at the teachers and others. The behavior specialist has been a great resource, but this week she was sick on Monday and Tuesday, and I was left alone to manage these destructive disruptions. Yesterday, two children played in the sink while I was teaching a math lesson and overflowed the sink onto my floor, and it actually seeped into the attached classroom. I have been requesting assistance from administration from day one. Administration says they understand and will be providing support, but these children have already lost at least 34 days since we're on to the 34th day of school. It is unfair that these children are not in a placement that best meets their needs, and it is illegal that their IEP times are not being met at this time. Thank you.
Good evening. I've spoken at school committee meetings, and so I just want to kind of reiterate some of the things I said there. We all received a mailing from Dr. Connolly about, it was the, I don't know, periodic special ed newsletter that we get. And in it, there were a couple of things in this week's edition about co-op classes and how they work very well when the teacher gets to play them with the co-op teacher. And unfortunately, the scheduling hasn't been arranged so that it's possible. And I don't know how many people that applies to, but certainly so in my school. I'm teaching at Tollgate. Secondly, there was a question about the ideal ratio of special ed to regular ed students in a class. And I'm not sure if Dr. Connolly writes these newsletters or not, but it said one-third to two-thirds. So one-third IEP to two-third non-IEP. So the ratio I have right now, in one class, I have 28 students. And I have 15 IEPs, of those intensive ed 2, special ed 9, and special emotional support 4. I have another class of 24 with 15 IEPs, 11 of those are intensive ed, 2 special ed, 2 English language learners. In addition, I have a student with hearing impairment who needs preferential seating. Many of my students need preferential seating as part of the IEPs. It's really not possible in a class of 28 to give everybody needs preferential seating. Preferential seating. I had an occasion yesterday with a girl in the class who was being disruptive, and I've had to speak to her a number of times. So I took her outside the classroom, and she said, well, I have ADHD. And I said, well, you know, you name a place where I can't put you anywhere away from anybody in a classroom full of 28. We're at capacity. So, I, you know, she can pick her seat. She can sit anywhere where she feels least distracted. But it's not a very nurturing environment for them. And they're losing out. The regular ed students are losing out. It's very difficult to give these kids the services they need in this situation. So I think it's just, it creates a bit of a stigma too, because now when I give quizzes, I do have to separate out the special ed kids who go to the library in the one class where I have a co-op teacher, and they take a separate quiz. So it's not as if they're, you know, totally being inclusive here. It's the only way we can give these kids a chance is to kind of create a separate tier of quizzes, for instance. So I don't think it's a model that's working. It's making it difficult for all of the people involved. So that's my piece there. Yes.
Matt, you had said that you have some students with special, I think, a special seating requirement.
Preferential seating.
Preferential seating. So describe that to us.
Well, usually in the IEP, it'll say closest to teacher, preferential seating, or away from distractions. In fact, I'll read, obviously, anonymously, well, maybe I won't be able to find it, but, you know, away from any distraction, any possible distractions closest to teacher. It just isn't feasible to do this. You know, in a small classroom setting, there aren't that many distractions. There are fewer distractions. It may be more possible to do something like that. And I've taught co-op classes before, back when we used to call them trans classes, you know, we had small class size, lots of individual attention, lots of time to get to know students' needs, and not a lot of people who are separated out, you know, stigmatized for whatever the needs are that they have.
Matt, do you have any students in your particular class that are AP students?
Oh, yeah, I do. In fact,
In the totality of the 28 and the 24,
yes,
you have some AP students in there as well.
Did you say AB students?
AP.
AP. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't have any AP students. No, no.
Okay.
No, this is just two regular freshman world history classes, so it's, you know, it runs the gamut.
Okay.
So I've got students who are, you know, fairly advanced, and then I've got students who are, I've got nonverbal students. I've got students that you have to kind of get them to write every word individually on the paper, and so they need somebody with them right there to be able to write that.
And do you have assistants in your class?
In one class, I have a special educator with whom I don't have any common planning time, and I have an assistant also. And they are a great help when they can be, but we really do need to do that planning. In the other class of the 28 students, I have no assistants at all.
So, thank you.
Thanks.
Good evening. Thank you for inviting us for public comment tonight. My name is Joan Wilkinson, and for more than 30 years, I have been a child advocate and community volunteers in hopes of enriching the lives of the children of Warwick. I am a longtime Warwick resident, taxpayer, and elementary teacher in the school system. I was proud of the special education program that Warwick had for more than a generation. Its reputation brought families to Warwick if their child needed special services. I hear we over-identified. I like to refer to it as, in Warwick, we did better than federal guidelines. We not only met our legal responsibilities, but ethical as well. With the current changes in protocol, I have had to pass students on to the next grade with their academic folders growing with documentation until enough RTI evidence finally brings them to the referral process. Sadly, for some of my little friends, up to 3 years can pass. Then I hear so-and-so is eligible for services. Well, I knew that back in kindergarten. I'm told no one is to blame. Well, parents trust that we as educators are doing what is best for their child. And when I meet with and tell them this is the way things are done now, they trust me to be their advocate. It is frustrating and heartbreaking for me. I chose this profession to have an impact on children and families. I was happy to be able to work in Warwick because of its education system, and I was invested in this community. Now, just last week, I heard if there is a behavior crisis, mental health, in which a child is in severe danger of harming themselves or others, we are not calling Kent Center directly. I knee-jerked, reacted, because the Kent Center is part of our community. They serve the families of Warwick, and then I hear the follow-up that it is possibly the school department that is saying, do not call them. My response in a loud gasp was, shame on the whole damn city if we are not there for our children. City Council members, and I was hoping the mayor would be here. I'm looking to you to step forward to help bring the integrity back to the Warwick schools.
Do you know of any instance where any school psychologists have been directed not to call 911?
My school doesn't have a school psychologist right now. But last year she did call, and that's why I was just told last week that we won't be doing that anymore. But no, I can't say that a school psychologist has been told not to do that, because I don't have one of those right now. Although I desperately need one.
The reason that I asked that question is this packet that I have in front of me was delivered indirectly to me today. And that was alluded to. So you struck my recollection when you said about can't call the Kent Center. That's why I had asked that question. Thank you.
Okay. Hello? Can you tell me who directed folks not to call the Kent Center?
No, when I was told that's not what we're going to do, I said, are you kidding? The Kent Center has been our mental health agency, and I cannot believe they're bailing on us. And so then my principal came back and said, I don't think it's the Kent Center that's saying no. I think it's the school department. But he used the words, I think, like it wasn't definitive. But that's what made me then respond, I can't believe, like, shame on the whole damn city, because I love Warwick. And I've been here, and I've worked with Donna on, gazillion committees over the 30-year period. And that's why I'm upset that the mayor's not here. I just wanted him in the back row. I've worked with him a gazillion times. And I just wanted him sitting up in the back row tonight, listening to what's going on for his city. So. No. Holloman.
Could you get me the name of that individual that said not to, or suggested that it wasn't Kent's fault, it was the administration's fault? Did you say it was the principal?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And he's a great principal. Yeah. No, but that's what I mean. He's a great principal, and I know he wants to do what's best, especially when you're talking on the kindergarten level.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
We have an impromptu speaker.
My name is Amy Sattel. I'm a school psychologist here in the district, so I just stepped up because I know you were addressing questions towards did the school psychologist know, were they involved, things like that. I cannot speak to that specific situation, but I know that there have been other situations where we have been directed to not involve the Kent Center, not call 911 to de-escalate the child and get them back to class. And these are situations in which a child has had to have been removed from the classroom due to unsafe behaviors and then continued to demonstrate unsafe behaviors in a small situation, like being physically aggressive towards the principal and other people who are just trying to keep that child safe. And the directive at that time in that specific situation was not to call the Kent Center, not to call 911, to de-escalate the child and send them back to class.
So if you or one of your colleagues under this emergency crisis type of situation, if you're directed not to call 911, and you're directed not to call Kent, who are you supposed to call? Who is supposed to intervene in that type of a situation to protect everyone?
Mm-hmm. In that situation and in other situations, we do have a staff member that works for the district who handles like behavioral, she kind of heads up the behavioral intervention team, and I believe she was called to kind of address that situation. But it's interesting that you bring that up because there was myself, a social worker, the behavior intervention specialist. You can have as many people in the room who are, you know, school-based mental health providers, but if a student is in crisis, that has kind of surpassed our level of intervention at that point.
And do you have training for that type of intervention? Do you have any EMT training or anything of that type?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I, you know, my training is, and usually when I work with teachers, we try to catch students before they've escalated to that point. But just like people have brought to this forum tonight, there are situations in which, of course, we try to keep children in the least restrictive environment. Of course, we don't want children leaving our buildings. But when children are unsafe, it's our concern for them. That's why we're calling for services. The whole reason why myself and my colleagues are here is for the kids. And so I try to become involved to de-escalate. But there are situations where a child has kind of passed that point of your ability as a mental health provider in the school to de-escalate the situation.
Without citing a specific example or student, could you describe to us a situation where you may be required to call 911? What would designate a call for 911 or for Kent Center?
Well, if a student is a Kent Center call might be made when you feel like the student is in imminent danger of harming themselves or others. They may have made a concerning statement to a teacher or to a friend who has then, you know, brought that to an appropriate mental health professional in the building, and then we have had in the past a great working relationship with the Kent Center where we call, get the parent on board, and usually because of this collaboration with the Kent Center, we can get them seen that day, or if not, we provide them with, you know, resources to get to usually a hospital, you know, but the Kent Center kind of determines what level of mental health intervention. Again, like I said, we're school-based. These children need, more intensive, clinically-based services.
in the Kent Center is trained for that. They're professionals in that field.
They are. Yes, they have a Children's Emergency Services. That's who we have our connection with. And they would assess the situation further, work with the parent. It might not be that they would go to the hospital that night, but it might be that they need some intensive counseling. And it's a great collaboration that we've had to get. Sometimes I'll even talk to the people on the phone and say, this might not be to the level of emergency, but this family really needs some intensive help. And they say, Amy, send them over. We'll meet with them today. And we get them connected with services, you know, very quickly.
And in that hypothetical situation that you just described to us, so my take on what you said is, not only is that particular youngster in harm's way, other children are in harm's way.
Yes.
The educator, who is expected to be the psychologist, the psychiatrist, the EMT, et cetera, is also in harm's way. Is that correct?
In certain instances, that could be true. Yes, there's physical aggression that could occur. There's a range of how students present, and some students will just present with making statements of concern, and other students externalize through their behavior things that are going on. So it's very individualized by student need, but there are many instances, and I think some of my colleagues have already addressed those this evening. I try my best to do what I can, but there is a lot of hesitancy now, second guessing ourselves, because as of recently we've been questioned on so many decisions that we make that you never know what the right thing to do is. And when you do ask for clarification on certain things, one day you might get one response and another day it might be another response. I have so many things that I would like to tell you all, but I don't want to I don't want to use up everyone's time, but...
We're here for a while. We're here as long as you need to be here.
Another example of this is... Well, I just want to make sure that I've answered the Kent Center emergency crisis question.
And the conclusion that I've drawn on the comments that you have said, given that hypothetical situation, is that our educators are being instructed not to react to a situation such as what you have described, the hypothetical situation, have been told not to react by calling 911, not to react by calling Kent Center, but yet you don't have anything in your teacher's manual that says this is what you got to do if that type of thing happens.
Well, I do have to clarify that, and I don't even know, again, I don't even know if everyone knows about this. The communication right now is so disjointed, and there has been some protocol, and I wish I had it in front of me. I wasn't really prepared to speak to all of this, so I'm kind of going off the cuff, but there is kind of a basic plan laid out. In this situation, you should do this, and it kind of goes up the levels of intensity, and there are... I wish I had it with me, but I don't have it with me. And it could be in there that it does say in certain instances you would call 911. But
thank you. You've done very well. Thank you.
Okay.
Councilman Lasser, just want to let you know that Mr. Pierce wants to speak in regards to this issue.
Yep, I realize that.
I just wanted to make the point that so I'm just asking, in your professional opinion, the situation you viewed that moment, was it the right call to call cancer, or is somebody else involved?
Yes, both myself and the social worker stood outside of that room because we felt like there were already too many adults involved, and we both said this should not be happening right now.